You're listening to Life Strategies with Monique. Get ready to be empowered and inspired.
Well, hello, 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 everyone, and welcome to another Life Strategies with Monique episode. And this week we have with us Elizabeth Clayman. Elizabeth Clayman is an author and a speaker, and she's going to share with us her story today on how she was able to overcome trauma, adversity, and abuse in her life. Welcome to the show, Elizabeth. How are you doing today?
Thank you. I'm so happy to be here. I'm doing great.
Well, tell us a little bit about your background, just so that our listeners will know a little bit about who you are and where you were from, so they can get an idea about where you've come from.
Well, I was originally born in Louisiana, and I say that, you know, you'll notice a lot of us start out with originally. I was originally from Louisiana. I married a military man, so I've been a little bit of everywhere all over the U.S., and we live in North Carolina now. And I run my speaking business and my coaching and self-help and wellness business out of LaGrange, North Carolina, a little bitty town in North Carolina. My husband has 4 years to retire, and this is where we're staying. We're not moving again.
Hey, you're done moving, huh?
I am done. 17 moves in 30 years. Wow. I am done.
Amazing. That's awesome.
I have put in my cardboard box time. I'm done.
Awesome. Well, you know, Elizabeth, you know, when we've talked before and I heard your story, and I was just so amazed by so many of the things that you went through, and how now, right now, at this point in your life, you're actually releasing a book. And
yes.
The title of your book is Beauty Rising from Brokenness. And that is such a powerful title. And not only that title, the subtitle itself goes into a little bit more of what you went through as a child. So just start from that childhood and talk a little bit about how all of this began in your journey and how you ended up moving to this place of being set free from your trauma and the abuse and moving into that life of healing, because I know there's so many women out there that I know that are listening that are actually experiencing some of those things that you've actually gone through. So talk a little bit, let's go back to your childhood and let's start from there and bring our listeners up to speed.
Okay, that's exactly why I share what I do, because I want to see other women set free from the brokenness, because I know how bad the brokenness can affect you. And my brokenness actually started in utero before I was ever born. And many people don't understand that. And I talk about that in my book, that we can have pre-birth trauma. And pre-birth trauma is caused by whatever atmosphere our mother is living in, whatever feelings and turmoil and things that she's going through. So you can actually, a child's brain chemistry can actually be changed in the womb before they're ever born by trauma. And that's how my trauma started. My mother was an unmed mother in 1965 in the very rural South, and a little bitty farming community, and that's a huge no-no. And she hid her entire pregnancy. And as a matter of fact, she says she didn't even know she was pregnant with me until she started having pain, and they took her to the hospital thinking that she was having appendicitis or something. And surprise, it's a girl.
Wow.
So I snuck up on everybody. And that's what my book talks about. And so my grandfather was dead set against me coming home. He wanted to put me up for adoption. You know, living in a rural community like that in the South, there was a lot of negative connotations, but he did have a change of heart, and they brought me home, and I was raised for the first 6 years of my life. Well, the first 5 years of my life by my grandparents as their child. So I had an uncle that was 9 years older than me, and my mother and two other children still living in the home. So I just fell in line, and grandma was mom and papa was dad, and I didn't know any different. And my grandfather died suddenly when I was five, and my grandmother, being a widow with only an eighth grade education and two children still to raise, couldn't adopt me. They were preparing to go through with adoption and adopt me. And she couldn't adopt me financially, nor during that time in life, they didn't let you adopt a single woman adopt children. You know, it was just a really different time. A lot of people don't understand that, but you have to think back to that was 50 plus years ago. So it was a really different time. So my mother, right after my biological mother, right after my grandfather passed away, she eloped with my stepfather, who is 10 years her senior and had 5 children from a previous marriage. And they were gone for several months. And then she came back and took me and just took me away from my grandmother, from the family farm, from my family, from everything I'd ever known, and took me across the state and put me in daycare and didn't explain anything to me. Just told me she was my mother, my stepdad was my father, and that was that. And I was extremely traumatized by that, especially being left in daycare. I felt abandoned because I had never been outside of my grandmother's care, not even at church. You know, we went to a small community church where kids were in the service with you. And if you acted up, you got took out and you were spanked and you straightened up and you went back in service, you know. So I had never been in anyone else's care. So there was a lot of trauma during, you know, after the age of 5, when I lost my grandfather, and then living in my mom and my stepdad's house, I was verbally, emotionally, and sometimes physically abused by my dad, my stepdad, and verbally and mentally, emotionally abused by my mom, and then sexually abused by my stepbrothers, my stepdad's 2 older sons. And so I went through all of that. And at 18, I made my first rebellious moment, my first break. And I rebelled against my entire family and married my husband, who I had only known for 4 months. And I'm happy to say 33 years later, we're still happily married. And it was the best decision I ever made. And I could not be more thankful. I took a big chance and it paid off.
So talk a little bit about those years, because you said there was a lot of physical, there was a lot of verbal, and there was a lot of mental abuse that was going on in your life. Talk a little bit about how that really affected you as a child coming up, because I think our listeners need to know what it is a person actually experiences, so that they will know, you know, what the signs are and what to be aware of, you know, especially with a child, because a lot of times children go unnoticed or they go nonverbal and they don't share what they may be experiencing. And it sounds like that's what you were going through. You had the place where you were being abused, and maybe, I don't know, maybe you did or didn't have a voice, but talk about what that did to you as an individual coming up.
It was very traumatic. And I remember from my very earliest memories, I remember feeling guilty. I remember feeling ashamed and not knowing why, but I always felt like everything was my fault. And even to the point of the sexual abuse, I never told anyone until I nearly had a nervous breakdown in my 30s when it all caught up with me and I went into counseling. And my counselor really had to pull it out of me. And I didn't tell anyone for a couple of reasons. For one thing, it would have caused more chaos, would have caused more fighting. There was constant fighting in the home all the time. And I could have told my grandmother, but then my grandmother would have confronted my mother and there would have been a whole rift and a problem there. I went back to my grandmother's every chance I got. If I was out of school, I was back at my grandma's house. If at Christmases, holidays, all summer, if I was sick or any kind of an inconvenience where my mother might have to miss work, shipped off to grandma's, which was great because that's where I wanted to be. That's where I felt safe and loved. And that's where I was introduced to Christ. And that's where I was saved. And my grandmother made sure that we went to church and that we knew the word of God. But I always felt very guilty and very ashamed. And the verbal abuse was mostly my stepfather saying things like idiot, and an ugly word for illegitimate. And, you know, that just really ran me down and made me feel bad. He had a really bad temper. And from time to time, he would just lose his temper and backhand me across the room. And when I was 13, I dropped a dish and he came up to me to backhand me. And I held up my arms and I said, "You will not hit me again." I didn't say it in those nicer words. I used some salty language in there that I don't use anymore. Mm-hmm. But I said, "You will never hit me again or I will call Child Protective Services." And that was the first time I really stood up for myself. Mm-hmm. And he stepped back in stunned unbelief with his jaw on the floor. And I ran and locked myself in the bathroom and would not come out until my mother came home from work. Mm-hmm. Because I was really afraid of what he might do to me if I was out with him. Mm-hmm. So
you were also experiencing some abuse from her as well, correct?
Yes, absolutely. She really blamed her getting pregnant on me. And she really projected the anger and hate and frustration for my biological father. She projected on me. And I don't really think they intended to. Now that I've gone through it, I've forgiven them. It's just that hurting people hurt people. And they have hurt from their past and pain from their past. And they didn't intend to do that. But that's how it happened. So my mother was somewhat verbally abusive, very much emotionally abusive and mentally abusive. And only once or twice did she call it spanking, but I would say it crossed the line into physical abuse, even though they would call it spanking. Mm-hmm. And when I got, I liken it to this story that I heard in a women's conference one time. That kind of abuse, when you grow up in that kind of environment, and it can even be, and I have people tell me all the time, "Well, I wasn't traumatized. I had a great childhood and I grew up in a loving, stable family." But it can be something as simple as a kid at school bullying you, a kid at school picking on you. A friend of mine said one time I was singing along with the radio and I said, "Oh, I love to sing. I'd love to be a singer." She said, "I think you need to get a new dream." And for years, I would not sing. I would not sing in church. I would only sing in my home or in my car because in my head, I heard and it agreed with what I believed, which was the lie of the enemy, that I wasn't good enough. Mm-hmm. And so I agreed with that. And so I believed that. So I wouldn't sing, even though for years my husband said, "You have a beautiful voice. You need to sing. You need to sing." And it wasn't until my 30s that I actually got the courage to join a church choir and sing in the church choir and absolutely loved it and would do it again now if my health would allow me to stand up there for that long. I absolutely love to sing, and I will sing at conferences at some point because I will overcome that lie completely and totally one day. Right. But it's even that trauma can be even something as simple as that. Or I also tell people, you know, I went to the doctor when I was about probably 10 or 11, 12, and I was in a growing spurt. And you know how kids grow, they get real tall and then they get kind of chubby and then they get tall again. And I was in that get chubby phase. And the doctor said to me, "You need to quit eating so many Big Macs." And I'd never had a Big Mac in my life, but that said to me, to my subconscious, "You're fat." Mm-hmm. And so all my life I've had that battle in my head because it agrees with what the lies that the enemy tells us. Mm-hmm. You're not good enough.
I'm so glad that you're touching on that topic of just words in itself, because I don't think people understand how powerful their words are and how impactful they are and how they literally plant seeds in an individual's life. Because, you know, it clearly states in the Bible, you know, as God said in the beginning, "Let there be." He spoke it. And when he spoke it, it came to pass. So we have that same kind of power to speak life and death over people's lives. Mm-hmm. And so even for you, you just said it, that people started speaking things into your life and you started believing those lies, which led down a different path you know, or put you on a certain path or a certain belief system that led you to where you were at that time, because now you're in a different place. So you said that you finally decided to tell somebody when you got in your 30s. Talk about what it took for you to be able to actually share what you went through, because I know it is never easy. It is never easy to come face to face with those demons, you know, that you harbor inside of yourself. So talk about what it was like and what you had to do to finally get to a place in your life, even in your 30s, because people tend to think that they can never let go of their past, but you can.
Yes, you can. There's always hope and there's always healing. Always. I don't care how old you are or how old those bruises are. There's always hope and healing. And for me, it came down to a point where I asked my stepfather about my biological father, because I never was told who he was and I didn't know his name. And my stepfather confronted my mother and asked her, told her that I wanted to know. And she just lashed out at me very viciously, and she refused to tell me. And then I go into this in great detail in the book, and how I came to accept that. But it was a very traumatic time, and I walked away, and I was for about a month. I didn't talk to anyone in my family, and I began to get physically ill. It started with asthma and then bronchitis, and it was constantly physically ill and catching every virus, every bug, everything that went around, which I had always had a weakened immune system. And I believe that that's from the trauma. I believe that the trauma, well, I know because of my studies, I have a background in naturopathic medicine and I have a degree in naturopathic medicine. So I know a lot about trauma and about healing and the way the body heals and healing naturally. And that's what I did. I used natural resources to heal myself. But all of the healing that you need to go through is physical, mental, emotional, and spiritual. We are a four-part person, and we have to heal all four of those parts in order to be healed and to have optimal health. So those physical and emotional traumas that I experienced were causing me to be physically ill, because I had pushed those down for so long, and they had just been scar on top of scar or bruise on top of bruise. And you know, if you get a bruise repeatedly in the same place, it just gets bigger and blacker and swells more, and it just takes longer to heal. But when you've had those traumas placed on you your whole life, and you've buried them, and then you begin to traumatize yourself, because you take those lies and you begin to tell yourself those lies. Every time you look in the mirror, you tell yourself, I'm fat. Every time a song comes on and you sing along, you tell yourself, man, I can't sing. So I just began to get really sick. And it started with asthma, then bronchitis. Then I came down with chronic fatigue syndrome, where my immune system was just completely shot, and I could not get healthy, could not stay healthy. And I went to doctors and they just gave me antibiotics and steroids, which I know now as a naturopath just ran my immune system down even more. Mm-hmm. And I just stayed in that point of chronic illness. And I was so chronically ill, my husband being in the military, when September 11th happened, he had to deploy in support of 9/11 and in support of enduring freedom. So I was so ill, I wasn't sure. I had three small children. I wasn't sure I could take care of my children. So we decided that we would move out of our rent house and put our belongings in storage, and I would go back down south for the summer while he was deployed, and we knew we were moving to a new duty station when he got back. And as fate would have it, or it has nothing to do with faith, as it would happen, there was only one place that we could stay, because there was no room in the inn anywhere else. And that was my mom and my stepdad's. Mm. And I went right back into that childhood, emotional, traumatized state of what I called zombie mom. My kids would tell me, Mom, you would just be zoned out. We would have to shake you to get your attention. And we were there for a couple of months, and we traveled, we visited other friends and stuff. but I call it my defining moment. It was one Friday night, a couple of months in, and my husband had come back. They had closed the base down early, and he had come back to Massachusetts where we were stationed at, but we had no house for the children and I to come back to. We had an RV, and my husband was living in the RV in the driveway of some friends' house that were remodeling a house that they actually flipped houses. He was helping them flip the house. So he was home, but he was living in an RV. And the kids and I were going to continue to stay until we were ready to move and then meet him and move. And my mom and my stepdad told me that my stepbrother was coming by on his way back to Louisiana from working in the oil fields in South Texas. And this was one of the stepbrothers that had abused me. And I had three small children. Mm-hmm. And I just had a panic. And I locked my children in a room and told them, gave them movies and toys and told them, don't come out. If you need me, stick your head out and yell for me. I told my husband, if he's staying in this house, we're going to a hotel. I'm not having my children even stay in the same house as him. And so as I'm sitting there, he comes in and he's obviously under the influence. And I'm sitting there and he's telling my stepfather how his ATM card won't work and he can't get cash to get gas to get home, as that was pre-debit card. You know, we had ATM cards. We would go to the machine and get cash out. And so, you know, for our younger millennial listeners, there was a day when you couldn't just use a card for everything.
I know, right? Like, they don't know who that is.
So if there's a millennial, you know, out there listening to us, that's, you know, that was a card you had to take to the bank and get cash out. So he couldn't get cash out. And my stepdad said to him, well, we don't have one of those. We just cash a check at the grocery store. But Elizabeth will go to the ride to the bank with you and help you because she has one of those cards. And Elizabeth just did exactly what you're doing right now. Those of you who don't know, I can see
look on her face like, wow, what?
Yeah, he just said, and that's exactly what I said. I just looked at him and I looked at my mother. My mother made eye contact with me and looked down at the table and didn't say a word. And I looked back at my stepfather and I said, like hell I will. That was my defining moment. That was it for me. I was done. And I've been done a few times in my life, but then I was done. Mm-hmm. It was like the story in the Bible where Jesus takes and puts the mud and removes this, says the scales are removed from his eyes and he can mm-hmm. see the blind man. It was like that. It was just the scales were removed and I could fully see that my parents really didn't care for me like they should. They did not love me like they should.
A really frightening moment to have to be back in that place with something you actually hadn't dealt with yet.
You know,
not really faced or, you know, confronted those fears or confronted anybody for that matter.
No, I hadn't told anybody. I had never spoken a word. I had never said a word to anybody. I mean, my husband knew about the abuse. Of course, he witnessed it because it continued into my adult years. You know, they still verbally abused me and, you know, mentally, you know, they still, you know, carried on with those same habits, but not the physical abuse and stuff. And that never happened to my children, although the verbal abuse did. Mm-hmm. And I just got up from the table. And the most remarkable fact about that story is they knew why he couldn't get any cash out of the machine, because his ex-wife, he had given her signed checks to cash to catch him up on his child support. And when he got his check, she cleaned him out. And they knew that. They had talked to her. So they knew there was no money to even get and still volunteered me to get in a car with somebody who was under the influence and go to the bank knowing he couldn't get money out. Mm-hmm. And I got up from that table and I went to the bedroom where my children were and I went in and shut the door and I said, you guys want to go home? And I was shocked because I loved my grandmother. I loved my grandmother's house. There was no place on earth I'd rather be. My children didn't say a word. They started packing. Mm. They wanted out as badly as I did.
Wow.
They were done too. And I said, guys, we're going to have to live in a camper. We don't have any bathroom hookups. We're going to have to go into the house to get showers and go to the bathroom. They didn't care. They just wanted out. So we packed and the next morning we left. And that was the last day I saw any of my family on that side. I sent a letter just explaining that I had a lot of trauma and a lot of emotions that came up and I needed some time and some space to work through it. Mm-hmm. And letters and emails came and went, and they were not nice and they were not pretty and they were very vicious and ugly. And I finally came to a point, and I talk about in our book, Beyond the Bruises, having two dreams that God gave me that were a revelation to me of what I had experienced and where I needed to go, what choices I needed to make, being a fork in the road. And I chose to walk with God so that He could heal me and set me free. And I had to walk away from that path of being with the abusers. And sometimes we have to make those choices. And it's hard. It is the hardest thing I've ever done. And it's been 15 years. And even though I've forgiven them and I love them, every time a hurricane comes down through down there, I always contact my half-sister to find out if they're all right. I pray for them and their salvation every day. But you cannot remain in the abusive situation.
But you know, what I found so interesting and intriguing about your story is that in the title of your book, you say Beauty Rising from Brokenness. Your subtitle says Journey Through Childhood Trauma to Chronic Healers into Healing. So it didn't even end there. With no. What you went through with your family.
No, that was
you
just
had another traumatic experience to happen thereafter.
Right. Well, I went through the healing that process then, and I describe it in my book. I go through a chapter in my book is on physical healing, a chapter on emotional, mental, and spiritual healing. And I walk people through how I naturally regained and rebuilt my immune system with whole foods and supplements and massage therapy and mineral baths. And I go through a lot of how I healed mentally. I got myself into counseling and I went to a Christian counselor every week, and she helped me to replace those lies with the truth. And she helped me to walk through the pain, because I had to go back to that childhood, to that little girl, and walk back through that pain to help her heal. Mm-hmm. Because I had to heal that little girl that was broken inside of me. Mm-hmm. And so I did all of those. And it took 2 years of going through and being really angry at God, being really angry at the world, not understanding. And it took a lot of work and a lot. And when I finally started getting better and I was healed physically and I was getting healed and I was feeling so much better, we had a family reunion coming up with my husband's sisters and their family and his parents. So I decided that I was feeling better. I wanted to take the two younger kids and go down south and visit our friends and his family. I say family because I haven't had contact with my family since then, but and his family. And then we stayed down there for a week and a half. And on the way back, we met my husband, my oldest daughter, in Kentucky for a family camping reunion with his sisters and his parents, because we all like to camp and we like outdoors and fishing in the lake and all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. And then when we left there, and this is what I go into a lot in the book, I Rise Beyond the Bruises, and this will be in my second book called Shattered, that'll be coming out next year. It's the continuation of that first story. Mm-hmm. But we were on our way back and we were in a car accident. And we were in a car accident with a semi truck in construction at 5 o'clock in the afternoon, rush hour traffic. And it was, the truck driver was in the wrong lane in construction on the shoulder of the road. And he was supposed to be in the left-hand lane. And he got to a bridge about 6 miles into Michigan and slammed on his brakes. And we could not stop because we were towing our camper. And so we hit him. And then the camper hit us, and then our daughters, who were 16 and 18, were driving my husband's truck. They hit the camper, and the camper hit us again.
Oh my goodness.
And so we were trapped in the truck underneath the back of the semi-truck. Wow. It happened that the semi-truck driver was from Canada. He spoke French, and he could not speak English. or read English, so he did not read the construction signs. And he got to that bridge, and it was a decorative bridge that arches over, and he didn't think he could clear it because we were driving on the shoulder of the road because of construction. And that's why they had the trucks in the middle and driving in the middle lane and inside lane. So all of our cars were completely destroyed, and my husband had to kick out a window and pull myself and my son out of the Suburban. We were trapped in the Suburban. And praise God, everybody in my family walked away with cuts and scrapes and bruises. But I spent six or seven days, I can't remember. It's still really a fog. I wrote about it. I have to go back and look and see what I wrote, because I had my husband check it because he can remember better than I could. So I was in shock at the wreck. But I spent 7 days or 5 days on the cardiac ward in the hospital because I broke my sternum, and that can cause damage to your heart. Mm-hmm. And then I also had such a severe whiplash that I have two discs that are herniated in my neck. I damaged both my knees hitting the dashboard and the door in the console. And I also ruptured a disc in my low back. Okay. So I had 7 surgeries following on after that, and 12 years of being bedridden and Social Security disabled.
Wow.
Because I kept praying, and this is not why it happened, but God used it. But I kept praying after I went through my first healing, God, what do you want me to do? Because he called me into ministry in 2002. And all of this with my family happened in 2003. And I went through that healing process. And once I came out of that healing process, I kept praying, God, what do you want me to do now? You called me into ministry. I surrendered to the ministry. What do you want me to do? And God just kept saying, be still and know that I am God. Well, I am not very good at being still. I go. And part of that is a mechanism we don't realize, a protection mechanism we have, that we run from all those things that were hurting us. We think if we just keep moving, we can stay a step ahead of them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But you can't. They catch up to you, and they caught up to me physically.
So true.
And so God kept telling me, be still and know that he was God, but I didn't know how to be still. I'd never been still in my life. I had always been on the go. So when the wreck happened, I had to be still and know that he was God. And I had to know that he was in control, and that, like Romans 8:28 says, for all things work together for the good of those who love the Lord and are called according to his purpose. And he was going to work it for good.
That's right.
And it was 12 years. It was 7 surgeries and 12 years of healing. And what I love about that is that 12 is the number in the Bible of completion. And so at 12 years, which was 2017, because the accident happened in 2005, it was finished. I was beginning to get back on my feet. I was getting healthy. I came to a point, and my last surgery was in 2014, and they could not control my pain, and I was going into shock. And I looked at my husband and I said, I am done. I'm not doing it this way anymore, because pain management was just pushing pills and pushing shots and pushing surgeries, and none of it was working, and it wasn't getting better. It was only getting worse. And I decided in that moment of going into shock, I was done. And I went home and I made a plan to get off of that medication. I was on 150 pain pills a month. 150.
That is a lot of medication.
That is a lot of medication. I was in a fog. So when people tell me, I can't get off of this, I can't get up off this medication, yes, you can. Mm-hmm. I am living proof. You can do it. There is hope and there is healing.
There is.
And it's a process. And it took me 2 more years. And it was slow. People say, how did you go from being in the bed to now you speak and you're an author and you do book signings and you fly around the country and around the world and speak? And I didn't get up out of bed and go speak. I got up out of bed and I sat in the chair for 5 minutes. And then I got up out of bed and I sat in the chair for 10 minutes. And it was a 2-year process.
Yeah.
And I got off those pills, 1/2 a pill at a time. I made a plan and I worked the plan, and I got to where I am, me and God. And I tell people, when you go through that, you need a GPS. You need a GPS, just like you can get from point A to point B, but you might have to make 16 U-turns. If you use a GPS, it'll tell you exactly where to turn and exactly where to go. Mm-hmm. I tell people, let me be your GPS. Come coach with me. I'll be your GPS, and I can guide you because I've already walked down that road. I know the path. Mm-hmm. I've been there, and I've walked with many others down the path, so I know how to get you from there to here. I know how to get you from hopeless to healed, and to get you to beauty from rising from brokenness. And so if you're living in brokenness, let me help you walk the path to healing. And we walk through the path of healing mentally, physically, emotionally, and spiritually.
That's awesome, Elizabeth. I mean, what a powerful story that, you know, you have. Because I know there are a lot of people or women who may have just decided, I'm just going to give up. There's no hope. And your story is such a message of hope, a hope for those women who are out there who are struggling. They don't know which direction they want to go. They want to give up. But your story is a story of healing. That of everything that you've been through, it gives them something that they can cling on to. And I heard you say earlier that God called you into the ministry, which is the most powerful part of this story, how God really began to move in your life. So talk a little bit about your ministry and how God is really using you today.
Oh, and that is my favorite part. I love, love, love being in ministry. And I love ministering to women. And what I love to do most is go and speak to groups of women and talk to them about hope and healing, about brokenness, about traumas, and how you need to tell your story because you need to get that story out and you need to get it where you can examine it. And so many people don't do that. And a lot of people aren't like me. They can't write it in a book and publish it and put it out there for the world. But you can write in a journal. If you don't like to write, you can record. But I love to talk to women and help women in my coaching and in my speaking. And that's where I minister. And I minister mostly to women, but I minister to men as well, because there's a lot of broken men out there that are hurting and that have been abused and that grew up in a bad situation or have been in a bad situation. And it just doesn't have to be trauma from your childhood. It can be trauma from you. Just life in general. Everybody, I tell somebody, if you haven't been through trauma, please call me and tell me your story because I want to hear it. Because I think everybody has been traumatized in some way. Everybody. So my ministry is to reach out and to touch women and to talk to women and to teach master classes, to speak, and to just teach them that there is hope and healing. And I will go just about anywhere and speak to just about anybody who will listen. And I don't care if it's 2 people, 10 people, or 100 people. It does not matter. I will go. an audience of one. I'm perfectly happy with an audience of one. And I have audiences of one a lot. And I do group coaching and I do one-on-one coaching as well. And I offer discounts and I offer scholarships. If somebody is struggling, I tell them, don't worry about the money. It's not about the money. God's going to supply my needs through His riches and glory. He's going to take care of it. But if they're in a place of hurt and brokenness, I want to be able to see them through and help them get out of that. And it's not about the money. But I also know what we don't invest in, we don't really use and we don't really utilize. Mm-hmm. So that's why I say I offer scholarships and I offer discounts. I offer programs to help them. But I do speak for free quite often because, speaking is just my passion. And that's what God called me at a women's conference, at a Christian women's conference. And I, and it's so funny, when God calls you to do something, sometimes you're like, what, God? Were you talking to me? And you kind of think, no, I'm just imagining things. I'm just hearing things. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of where I was in my life. I'm imagining things. And then the following Sunday, we were in the process of moving to our next duty station and the youth pastor's wife came up to me and we had been at this conference on Friday night and Saturday. And on Sunday, she came up to me after church and I really didn't know her. I didn't have youth at the time. I knew who she was, but we weren't friends. We didn't really know each other. And she said, during that conference yesterday, I was thinking about you and I thought you'd be really good at talking like that with all of your moving around and your experience with the military and everything. And I went, whoa, God, okay. That was a confirmation for sure. Yeah. And then about a week later, I was reading in Isaiah, and it talked about going to nations that do not know you and going to people that do not know you and proclaiming my glory because I sent you. And I was like, that's two confirmations, okay. Mm-hmm. So that's when I was called in the ministry, and then now my ministry is speaking and teaching and coaching women and people who need to be delivered from the brokenness.
Well, tell our listeners how they could get in touch with you if they wanted to reach out to you as a speaker or for a conference or anything that they may have coming up. How could they reach out to you?
The easiest way to get in touch with me is my website, which is elizabethclamon.com. And that's C-L-A-M-O-N. So it's just elizabethclamon.com, and I have a contact form on there that will send me an email directly, or they can email me at elizabethclamon.com as well. And Elizabeth at elizabethclamon.com. I forgot one of the Elizabeth. Elizabeth at elizabethclamon.com, which is my direct email, and they can email me directly there. They can also find me on social media under Elizabeth Clamon Speaker or Elizabeth Clamon or Clamon Natural Health, C-L-A-M-O-N Natural Health. On Twitter, I'm under Clamon Natural because health was too long. They wouldn't let me put that whole title. And because I do have a blog and a natural health blog that I do write for, and I also have contributors that write for me as well. And we write about a lot of natural solutions to flus and colds and chronic fatigue and fibromyalgia and a lot of things like that. And I have a lot of coaching programs that go along with that as well. So pretty much if you remember my name, you can find me, because I think I'm the only one. I don't know any other Elizabeth Clamons, but Clamon is such a unique name. It's C-L-A-M-O-N, and it's just clam on. That's what I tell people. It's like clam on. So if you go to elizabethclamon.com, or you can email me at elizabeth@elizabethclamon.com. And that's the best way to get in touch with me, or via social media.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Elizabeth, for coming on the show today to share your story, because I know just by listening to your story that there's so many women out there that are being blessed by what you've shared today and how you were able to overcome your traumas, your tragedies in life, and then find hope and healing, because that's what the women are searching for. A lot of our women are searching for hope and healing. So Elizabeth, thank you again so much for being on the show today. And to my listeners out there, all of her information will be in the show notes. So if you're looking to get in contact with her, just make sure you go to the website, blogtalkradio.com, or you can go to my website, MoniquePenaway.com. The podcast will be there. Just click on the show and you'll be able to see all of her information. So thank you so much for tuning in again today on Life Strategies with Monique. So until next time, stay empowered and educated.
You've been listening to Life Strategies with Monique.